Today on our Tech for Business podcast, we're continuing our zero trust journey. So we started with traditional, which relied heavily on manual processes, and then transitioned to initial, which kind of began our step into automation. And today, Kyle, our president and CEO, along with Todd, our COO and CISO, and Nate, our director of cybersecurity and vCISO, are here to talk about the advanced stage. So I'm going to throw it to Nate first, because he was on both podcasts before, to just give us a little background and then kind of a high level of what we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, so zero trust is not a new term, right? This has been around, I think 2012 is maybe when it was first coined. But essentially, we're just talking about how organizations are going to be moving towards, rather than the open, you know, the access to everything that we typically used to have. Think of, again, the castle, right? In the past, in the medieval times, is once you made it through the front gate, you had access to anything essentially within the castle. Now we're saying every interaction with every type of data, every type of device should be evaluated, right? Think of, like, again, going back to the medieval, the Trojan horse that comes in, right? Is once it comes in, something could still happen, even if you did trust that Trojan horse at the time. So in the event that that happens, can you contain the threat and the impact, you know, to the desired actions, which, you know, obviously is not any type of impact in the first place, but can you minimize it once it does happen? So we've also talked a little bit about the, like, climbing a mountain a metaphor. Mm-hmm. So when you first start off, it's really easy. Basically, just plan out your adventure. And then we start talking about, okay, now you've made the trip and you've made it to, let's say it's Mount Everest. You've made it out to Nepal, right? You know, you've taken quite a bit of initiative to get to that point, but you've only got up to base camp, right? You took a bus up there. It hasn't taken a lot of effort. Now that we're talking about the advanced stage, you're actually doing the hiking, right? This is where it's going to require a lot of work and effort and planning, and maybe practice before this to be able to get up to this next stage. And then lastly, we'll summarize on another podcast in the future called Optimal. That's reaching the peak of Everest, right? And that's what the full concept of zero trust is going to be. So again, welcome to the mountain summit we're climbing, and there's going to be a lot of work that comes out of this, but this is where it starts becoming really fun, right? From a security guy, at least. So.
It hasn't been fun up until this point.
Oh, it's been fun. This is real fun.
This is where the tools and the automation come out, which makes it feel like you've done a lot of work to improve your security posture.
That's tech term for expensive. I'm just kidding.
That's the business side.
But if you've budgeted it and planned appropriately.
There's the qualifier. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. I love it. Well, maybe, you know, we're going to dive right in. Maybe, Todd, you could kind of start us off. I know your answer is always it depends. But is there a best practice? You know, we've talked a little bit about the pillars that come with zero trust. Is there a best practice place to start when you're transitioning to this advanced?
Yeah, I think there is. I mean, we talked about it in the last couple of episodes on where to start, just generally speaking. And as we get into advanced, it's a lot more of a maturity model. And so I think both Kyle and Nate had mentioned it in the last episode where Kyle kind of framed it as building blocks. You're building your blocks and you're getting to a place where you wouldn't normally take a bite all at once. And Nate used the boil frog analogy. You are kind of boiling the frog, if you will. You are kind of stepping it up. But there are a lot of things that once you get them in place, when you start to ratchet things up a little bit, you can naturally get a feel for it. And it's generally accepted. That's in regards to helping your organization adopt the change. So I'll use a quick analogy of when I first started at CIT, we would do annual phishing simulations, and then we upped them to quarterly, then we went to monthly. We now do them every single week. And so you can kind of see as how our maturity has continued to progress. We slowly ratcheted things up to get them to a place where we felt, okay, we can naturally handle that. But where I'd say the natural spot to start here at Advance is going to be heavily based on identity. And I just want to get Nate all pumped up. but it really is the cornerstone of where zero trust really starts to mature is on identity. There are a lot of things that you can do to kind of get rid of some of the friction that are presented by security. So for example, once you get to this level, you start to talk about things like passwordless management. You talk about phishing resistant MFA. So we talked about MFA in the past. Where you get into phishing resistance is when you're presented with the MFA, instead of it just being a push, you have to say, for example, it pushes a number to you instead. So you actually have to look at the screen and say, yep, that is actually me. Whereas in the past at lower maturity levels, you get a push and it may not be something you did. And we have seen this when pen tests have happened at organizations where someone says, I'm going to just see if I can get in, and the user will go ahead and accept it, even though it wasn't them. Phishing resistance gets past those types of things. But these are the areas where you start to really build on the maturity of the organization. And I'll pause because I can't take the whole 30 minutes.
I'm sure you could.
I could. I shouldn't.
Yeah. I'll just quick ride on the decision of Todd to try and pump me up on identity just a little bit. Is automation when it comes to access for employees is going to become a really big component to this. And so there's some tools that have this natively built out, right? Let's call it, let's say you have Active Directory and it's tied to something like Office 365 or Google or whatever it is. When the IT is notified, they can go terminate access in one tool and it breaks access over in the cloud solution as well. You can start taking this a bit further. Not many organizations link their HR system to their IT system. Those tend to be two desperate systems, and putting those links between the two greatly empowers the organization to create and deprovision accounts with rapid speed, which then impacts the security of your organization as well. Because hypothetically, what if you had to let your IT person go, right? Is do you have them walk over to the critical server and say, hey, can you start disabling your account? No. What you're probably going to do is say, HR, this employee is terminated. As soon as HR goes into the HR system and cuts off access, it's pushed downstream to all of your other applications or as many that allow it. That's a really fun project. You will learn a lot about business processes and how the two different departments have worked to manage users in the past. I'll kind of go back to the mountain analogy of, this is hard work. We are climbing up the mountain. And so in this project specifically, it's a lot of process mapping, saying, what do you do to create new users? When do you do it? What is my process? How much time do I need? What's all the data that you're collecting? And what's all the data I'm collecting? And start blending them together, because we know that in HR, there's legal first names versus preferred first names. How do you account with that during an automation process? So it seems easy, just link the two together and it pushes, but it's a significant amount of time truly identifying and mapping all processes interdepartmentally in your environment.
Yeah, as organizations tend to grow, they tend to pick up a lot of things as they go, whether it's new tools, web-based, you name it. And where you get into this, I'll refer to it as lifecycle management. As you go through this lifecycle management piece, not having the ability to quickly clean up is a potential risk. So the more automation you can get in place is a big boon for the organization and your IT staff. Nate kind of hinted at this a little bit. I've worked at a fair number of organizations in my career, and I've always seen the transitioning of an employee as being one of those areas that's not always the smoothest. There tends to be a lag between when the HR process happens and the IT part starts. And so when you get to a life cycle that's automated, that can happen literally instantly or within seconds. So you're not waiting days, weeks, months. And there is always the nuance that goes with it too, is, hey, that person had access to X, Y, and Z. Don't disable it. Don't change the passwords. There's other ways around that. You should still do your best practice and disable the accounts, remove access, et cetera. And then you can go back and clean up after the fact. But it does definitely help with where you're going. It also helps with the provisioning too. So I don't mean to just say that when somebody leaves, you've got this great solution. It helps with provisioning too. It gives you the appropriate permission sets with role-based access and a variety of other things that you get from that process as well.
Yeah, you're kind of speaking to what I was going to chime in with from a business leadership side of it. You know, the ROI that you start to see for the expense of this is getting that new employee productive as soon as possible. And then knowing from a risk standpoint, if somebody exits the organization, knowing that you're going to get their access closed off and mitigate, you know, any risk or exposure from potential data loss that could incur, ensure that it's done and done consistently. You know, that those are two big checkboxes that I love from those processes that this advanced level gives you. And that level of maturity is just something that that I love, that just bring that into the overall equation.
Yeah, one last thing that I'll throw on this piece is if you are a compliance organization, all the reporting is there for you too. So you can show the soup to nuts of this is exactly what happened across the identity of an individual as they come and go.
Yeah. My main challenge from the technical side is if you're ever letting someone go and the tool works so well that it severs their connection while you're terminating them, because HR jumped the gun, that's a challenge. So again, it goes back to just the processes of, hey guys, here's, we needed to find that, you know, now all these tools are tied together, but
yeah. That happens in the manual world too. Pink slips have been delivered and door access has been disabled before meetings have occurred. So it's not just old.
I was going to ask, because I know that, you know, we talked a little bit before the podcast started about how excited you all are about these advanced and optimal stages. What are some of those challenges, like the process mapping, that you're going to hit when you try to get to this advanced stage?
For me, I think it's culture, right? It is a lot of this automation changes processes. And there's a lot of things where you've put something into play and maybe there's more work for the end user. So, you know, I'll touch on kind of the next pillar. We talked on identity and I think someone's going to come beat me down if I keep going down that avenue, but under devices, right, is device compliance. How do you ensure that all of the devices are encrypted? They have maybe a strong password to be able to access it before being able to access corporate data. And so there's friction there when it comes to the end user saying, I don't want company data on my phone or, you know, company visibility into my personal phone. There's other components such as maybe they've made a change and then it broke the compliance and then broke access. And, you know, they are trying to actively jump on a meeting at the time and you go, sorry, right? Your device isn't compliant. Yeah, use a different device that is, like your laptop or iPad or whatever you've configured. And it also comes down to having to have leadership on the same page, right? Is this isn't something that CIT's, you know, security team has pushed out and just said, we're just doing this, right? We needed people like Kyle to say, no, this is the direction CIT is moving forward, because number one, it makes sense for our business. It minimizes risk, everything like that. But if we didn't have Kyle's buy-in or Todd's buy-in, those changes would not have happened. And then from the support side, because I'm usually the one that has implemented a lot of these tools, is I love to make friends with all the squeaky wheels, right? Is these are the users that have historically, I'm going to say complained about the processes, but it probably means that our process needs to improve a little bit better. And so learning from your squeaky wheels and going, how can we improve whatever it is that we implemented to minimize friction for future individuals? But there's a lot of that to get to a point where you have a well-optimized, you know, fast-running, smooth-running car. There's a lot of oil that has to be maintained along the way, right?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, I've spent a lot of time going into department meetings and trying, you know, to explain the reasons for the changes and ask for their help and adhering to the policies and listening to their sides and then going back to Nate and saying, what can we do and work through those things. And Nate spent his time and Todd spent his time. So That's 100% right. You just have to be willing to commit to it. You're going to have to do some organizational PR, and you're going to, it's not going to be a one-time meeting and just miraculously it all happens. It's an ongoing process, and it's going to continuously change as things go on, because security is not static either. So as you continue to roll out, you know, different device controls, it's going to continuously change and morph depending on how the threats change. So you're going to, you know, this has to be a regular cadence and a regular part of the organizational culture to continuously explain the policies and regulatory requirements of what you're doing or why your organizational policies are doing this. And I think if the more you can get that into the culture and have the culture adapt to it, then it will start to smooth out. But definitely making the transitional side of it, that you're getting through the bumpy part to make those changes. But just know it is a longer path. Don't expect it to happen over weeks. It's months and months and into even years of cultural changing to get people adapted and understanding what to expect and how it works.
Yeah, I mean, I think you guys make excellent points, and I loved Nate's turning his detractors into champions. I think when you go through change management in general, that's a fantastic way of moving forward, because if you can get them on board, the rest of the organization typically comes with. And the reason why I wanted to touch on that briefly is because I think when you ask what are some of the bigger struggles, it inevitably tends to be the unknowns. And what I mean by that is, while you've done a really good job of mapping and implementing and bringing a lot of people on board, you inevitably miss something. You didn't see it coming. You didn't know if I do this, it impacts Y down the road. And when that happens, the organization's got to be willing to accept it. And the reason why I touched on Nate's component of the detractors is if those people aren't already on boards, they're going to be the most vocal individuals, and you're going to have to kind of continuously fight that. So the faster you can get in front of that, the faster you can make them your champions, the more successful you'll be. And you can kind of minimize a lot of the stuff that Nate and Kyle kind of expanded on there. So that one is tough. And unfortunately, there isn't a real good answer on how you address the unknowns. If you knew it, it wouldn't be an unknown, right? And so it happens. You didn't intend it. Yes, the last podcast we got into stuff like, you know, we're impacting the app dev team. Well, when that happens, you're going to find stuff you really didn't anticipate coming, and you just got to be aware of it. Now, that might be a good transition, and I'll throw this out there and we can decide to go down that path or not. But another one of the pillars we had was devices, which I kind of boil into assets in general. Some of the things that we need to do and automate the process of is definitely knowing what we have access to. And my thought process at the moment is very heavily focused on SaaS. And in case anybody doesn't know what SaaS is, software as a service, it's most of the applications that are web-based. More often than not, an organization will be surprised. We went to a conference and they said, for an organization roughly 75 people big, how many SaaS applications do you think you have? And I turned to Kyle and I was like, I don't know, 10, 15. And they said the average is well over 150. And then I turned to Nate and I said, what's the number? And he said it was more like 1,000. So I was surprised. Talking about unknowns, there was a shining a light into a shadowed corner I had no idea we had. So it was great to find that out, but finding tools that help you figure that out. So Nate had the answer, right? We did know as an organization. I didn't, but the organization did. So as we keep going down those paths, those are kinds of things that are very important. Do you have them? And closing the loop on this one is, there was a huge chunk of them that our app dev team was using that I was like, what is this? Do you need this? Is this business critical? How does this impact you? So it drove a lot of additional conversation. And of course, they're very defensive. Of course, I need that. I absolutely have to have access, and please make it admin. But that's a different topic.
So I'd love to push us down these other pillars. And we talked a little bit about challenges. What is sort of some of the most exciting things about this advanced level?
Identity. I'm just kidding.
We'll do another podcast.
Automation. It's so fun when you just see stuff work and it doesn't require that human capital to maintain it anymore. So this is where you're starting to really see the efficiencies come in. This is one of the big things where organizations, they tend not to want to spend a lot of money on tools, right? But they're totally willing to spend money on labor. And so it's such a strange concept, or, you know, like, you know, where they go, we're willing to spend the same amount of money, but we value people more. But one of the things that we often talk about internally here is, can I offset that labor cost with a licensing cost? Because now I've freed up that individual to go do something better, right? Move the organization forward. And so, yes, you are increasing costs overall, but now you're starting to see the force multipliers come to be a more nimble, agile, you know, competitive organization and make actual progress rather than just purely trying to sustain where you're at today. Now, there's organizations in all stages. Maybe you do want to just sustain the business that you have and you're comfortable. That's totally fine. If you're trying to go down the zero trust journey, you're probably not in that stage. You are trying to actually push forward. And so it's one of the things where I'll just use the example of our HR system and tying it to our identity system, right? Was we went through and calculated how much labor is our IT and HR staff using. And if we can get the software licensing for roughly the same amount, doesn't it make sense to, you know, reduce mistakes, reduce a lot of the labor that then has to be played in on top of that to fix all the mistakes? And then also, to Kyle's point, is reducing the risk, because we know that access is going to be terminated the second the HR decides that employee is terminated. New user creation, right? Is rather than having to hope that your IT individual isn't on vacation when you have a critical new employee to start, let the tool automatically do it, ship out a laptop, all they have to do is sign in, and they're ready on day one. So that's one of the things I think is really fun, because you start getting removed from a lot of the mundane tasks. You get to go build something new and just let the tools take care of all the grunt work, essentially, right?
Yeah, I think that's kind of, yeah, I mean, you look at this level, to me, it's looking at it, what automation system can we use to address the overall need of the pillar side of it? There's an automation component to every part of it side of it. It doesn't eliminate the person. There's people that are reviewing the side of it, but every level of it has automation introduced into it to give you that consistency and that force multiplier that Nate was referring to. And that's kind of where the excitement comes into, because that automation just gives you so much capability and so much consistency that a person just cannot do, you know. And that's, it speaks to the cloud systems and those other sides of it. So it's a tremendous enabler to the organization side of it. And to get to that final stage that we want to talk about, you know, get to that ultimate side of it, you can't get there until you master this level. You got to master the tools and the automation for that to even be an objective, you know. So that's why it's so exciting side of it. And any point of it is a move forward, is the thing. You don't have to master every pillar of it. Any level you start to move organizationally is a step, you know, better for the organization. It's something to remember. You know, you don't have to be at 100% on every side of it to have the organization benefiting. Every move forward is a move to benefit the organization, that you're better. Your risks are getting reduced. The errors are being reduced. You know, the employee productivity is increasing. You're getting, you know, your valuable FTEs are being, as Nate directed, to other more, you know, typically customer focused, you know, more externally focused output side of it. You know, there's just great things that come from it. So that's why we strongly encourage companies to look at these tools and these sets. Yes, they have a cost that we alluded to earlier side of it, but getting that into the overall budget and looking at it in the long-term perspective, it does have a tremendous value proposition back.
Yeah, I'll put on my C-level sales hat on a little bit. As we're going through this, I mean, both Nate and Kyle killed it. But if you look at it, as Kyle was talking, I was thinking that your people go into a value area, right? So you're starting to get them to do the highly strategic things that your organization wants to do. If you're growing at 4%, your organization is static and or dying. And so most C-levels looking at the world thinking, I need to grow. And in order to grow, you need to find your efficiency. So if I've taken the HR person away from going through the onerous task of setting up a user and everything that goes with it, and allow them to go do other things, I can be driving the culture forward, I can be getting better reporting, I can be doing all kinds of employee engagement stuff, you name it, there's all kinds of value that are in those types of statements. When we talk about the automations from everything, right, devices, when we've got a known good hardened image, I can blast that onto a computer in minutes versus hours. So you get more efficiencies. When it comes to the compliance world, you can start to automate a lot of that type of stuff too, whether it's reporting, it's connected to other tools. Again, I've now allowed my compliance person to go do other things that are more important, building better training tools, getting into the things that are value driven and not digging into the weeds of reporting. One of the things that I kind of remember is the very first time that we started to transition into passwordless, we start to get into friction removal too. And I think Nate used the phrase with me when we turned it on was, this is a game changer. And going transitioning from typing in your password over and over and over again to sitting down at your laptop, hitting a key and it logs you in, you go, wow. That is a game changer. So when you get to this level, you're starting to get all the things that are in there. You're getting good compliance. You're getting great, strong tools. You're getting automation that enable a whole other portion of your business, but you're also removing the friction that goes along with a lot of the security tools as well.
Yeah. I want to make sure, because we have in our other podcast, made sure to touch on all the pillars and what that looks like. So we talked a lot about identity and devices. What's different about networks, that application and workloads and data for an advanced stage?
Yeah. Over on the network side, it's a lot of ensuring that the environments are properly segmented, right? And if something is trying to cross over from one environment to the other, that you're starting to introduce checks and balances within there. So hypothetically, let's say that you're, you know, either coming in through like a VPN or maybe an area in the network that's like IT staff, and you're trying to get into your critical resources, are you able to do device posture check to, you know, and this kind of is blending the devices and the network component a little bit, but saying, am I ensuring that something is running an EDR solution before I'm granting access into that network? So you have some type of network access control sitting there, evaluating, you know, the devices and the identities of the individuals that are trying to cross those network boundaries. So that's a really, really fun project as well. I'm not going to go too deep into that, but there's ways that you can start blending those multiple validation checks together to ensure that the identity of that transaction is legitimate and vetted out properly. When it also comes down to some of the networking stuff is risk assessments, right? Is, do you know the networks in your environment that are prone to more risky activities? So for example, let's call it your guest network, right? You have lots of unknown devices coming out of the network, so you don't know the device states of them. We've seen this at CIT, right? We brought in a vendor and we were monitoring our network and we saw a vendor device that was compromised and it was beaconing out to a remote Trojan. We called them out on it and said, hey, by the way, this isn't allowed on our network, turn it off, because we see that you're compromised. Go tell your IT staff when you go back home, right? So we're able to monitor that type of activity in our own environment.
And isolation,
automatic isolation, right? If you see network scanning in your environment, can you automatically sever those connections? And so that's just the really fun stuff when it comes to the networking component. Todd and Kyle, I don't know if you had any other things before I go jump into workloads and data.
No, I think that's
good. Yeah. You know, I know Todd kind of mentioned that he wasn't quite starting with data, but on the last podcast I said was starting with the data, right? Is that's what we're all trying to protect. And so this is where you start really seeing the automation come through for DLP, right? Data loss prevention. Data loss prevention, there's a lot of different ways of doing it, but can you at least identify when someone's sending out social security numbers, Accounting, credit cards or healthcare info. Maybe it's your customer directory and there's a massive amount of phone numbers that get sent out at once, right? We know that individuals are going to try and take stuff like that. You could even get as far as you want of resumes, right? If you want to be a little more the big brother, in your environment and say, can I predict when one of my employees is going to leave so I can maybe try and correct it and, address the issues before it to maintain that relationship. Again, because we know that employees are expensive to retrain or bring on and, you lose a lot of efficiencies of that. And so this automation can help identify and alert and, correlate data for you to better protect and also make better early decisions of what you need to do to maintain efficiencies.
Yeah. And again, I mean, we're repeating ourselves, but a lot of the stuff that's mm-hmm. automated is making sure your data is encrypted at rest and in traffic, in transit. And there's a lot of other things too. Where is the data? Who has access to the data? So on and so forth. But again, all the whole intent of this level is you're looking at automating the processes as well. And I don't mean to diminish it anywhere. I kind of joked and said data is boring, but the reality is it's one of the most important pieces. And data loss prevention is hard. Mm-hmm. It is extremely hard. So getting your arms around that is another one of those massive projects too. So I'll leave it at that because that's a big project and we can do a whole DLP. Podcast as well.
Just go back to floppy drives again and everybody will stop. Get anything up.
Whenever anyone asks me how much do I need to spend on DLP, I just say how big is the checkbook, because it really is that type of conversation, right? There's a lot of things that you can address for common areas. This is a little tangent, but the Queen of Cuba, right? She was a spy that was stealing data from the FBI about Cuba during the Cold War. Everything that she had, she memorized and wrote it down and gave it to her handlers. There was no data loss prevention system that could have prevented that, right? Mm-hmm. And right. So that's where, to Kyle's point, is DLP is hard.
Yeah. I mean, people's got, a camera on their phone. I mean, they could take a picture of the screen, so that's really tough to prevent. I mean, you're going to have some level you're going to have to do, but the system's going to do a lot to prevent, you don't need to make it easy. There's a lot of trends that people will just take for granted that can be done. And there's a lot of indicators and a lot of tripwires and a lot of things that can give you indications of DLP that are happening in the organization that are going unchecked in most. So again, why leave the door wide open? I mean, that is not necessary. And that's what I think this is really about, is making sure that you do put in the necessary controls, because you should on those sides of it. But you just need to have the understanding that it's not 100%. And that just, to Nate's point, there's other points of data that just don't necessarily apply, but to what is applicable, you should control it to the best of your ability side of it. And that's really what this speaks to.
Yeah. And I think there's two components that come to mind as Kyle was talking about that is role-based access control, right? Is organizations, we've already kind of addressed this in the earlier stages of these podcasts, is when one person moves from one role to the next, did all their permissions change as well, right? Because typically we just see permission creep is, well, now we need more access, so they grant more access, but then you never remove the stuff that they no longer need. And so if one person, I'll go pick on Todd, for example, he moved from our CISO to now COO, he's still performing both duties, but if he ever gives up, like a CISO title, we should go remove the CISO roles and focus just on data that is relevant to him, right? Mm-hmm. And then here at CIT, we also have little tripwires of sensitive data, right? And so these are some of the things that your organization should at least consider as well. So for example, your board reports, right? These are all the most sensitive conversations that typically happen in your environment. If someone, an IT admin, is trying to go touch a board report, can you alert on it? Intellectual property, trade secrets, whatever it is, competitive intel that you're trying to maintain, you can trust those individuals that maybe had it, but maybe still put in a tripwire in there to see if someone's abusing it. So
yeah, I mean, I think that's good for the data thing. When it comes to applications, and I think we're running a little long today, which is great. We got three long talkers on here. Good job. Yeah. When we get into applications and whatnot, I won't go too terribly far into it, but it's important as everything else, right? When you're looking at the tools, do you have the ability to know what your data, where it's at, and where it's going? So, you know, often you'll see this in the compliance industry. They'll ask you for a network diagram. And what you've really seen over the last handful of years is, can you include all the systems that are off the immediate network, right? So you're starting to look at web apps and so forth, and how does your data flow to those things? And you can look at all of the big tools today, whether that's a NetSuite, a Salesforce, you know, the big stuff. How does your data flow in and out of those systems in addition to everything else that you have? So you need to be aware of it. You need to be able to track it. You need to make sure the data is encrypted to and from, et cetera, and who's got access and so on and so forth. So all the building blocks we talked to up until this point, it all applies to the workloads and applications. In addition to, there are the general things you need to do as well. You need to make sure that you're doing the triad. I know Nate had a triangle analogy in the last one. The triad in the security world is confidentiality, integrity, and availability. When you look at the availability piece of it, you got to make sure that your tools are up and running, which is why a lot of times you'll see the platform as a service, the infrastructure as a service is why they actually exist, is to make sure that your availability component is there. Plus, you do offload some risk, but that's a different topic altogether.
For sure. As we wrap up here, I know next time we'll be talking about the optimal stage, and we'll cover the biggest differences. But my closing question is, what are each of you most excited about? I mean, you were excited about automation here for advanced. What are you most looking forward to discuss when we get to the optimal stage? So automation and identity.
Being done.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's the done part is kind of a moving target, but go ahead, Kyle.
Yeah. No, it is the completion of the overall phase. Mm-hmm. It's taken this automation to its ultimate level side of it, because you're beginning the automation phase and you're getting it to its, you know, final tuned process of it. So it's as a level describes, it's optimized. It is tuned. You've taken out the kinks, and it's fully functional and optimized straight down. So it's super exciting to see it work.
Yeah. I think one of the big differences between advanced and optimal is going to be, we've introduced the automation to at least get access to these tools. But once you get into optimal, now you're looking at continuous validation of everything. And so if something changes, it severs access, right? And so you get back to that protected state. So that's the biggest differentiator for me is per second evaluation of all these connections. And as long as everything checks out, no one notices. As soon as something changes, you're back to being in a secure state.
Yeah, I was going to echo the continuous aspect. So that is the huge piece in optimal, is that things are going on continuously. It's not a point in time reference that a lot of the other areas are.
Perfect. Well, that's exciting. Thank you so much, Kyle, Todd, and Nate, for joining us today. If you like this podcast, please make sure to like and subscribe. If you have a topic or a question, please reach out to us at info@cit-net.com or head out to our website, cit-net.com/podcast. And we'll be back next week with an all new episode.